welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Now, many of you who have been listening for the last few weeks may not be aware of it, but this is the first opportunity that we've had to be live. This is the 30th of May. It's 3 o'clock on the West Coast, and we're going to be sharing our time and our energies with the folks from commontables.org. And we're going to find out just exactly how common those tables are, what they're made of, and how you can participate in this incredible organization that brings people together from diverse backgrounds. We'll find out more. But here on the Central Coast, we've been going through some interesting things. The week that we weren't here, which was the second week in May, we were dealing with a wildfire along the what they call the urban interface here in the Santa Barbara area, along the south side of the mountain range. And it was rather frightening, but we were trying to keep everybody informed as to what was happening. And that's kind of what we do with this program, Tell Me Your Story, keeping you informed about the various endeavors, the people that are out there trying to make a difference. And actually, I should rephrase that. They're not trying to make a difference. They are making a difference. With me on the phones from the group, which is called commontables.org. That is the website that you can go to and find out all about what this organization is about if you just can't wait to listen to the interview. We have with us on the phones from Colorado, we have David and David Corby and Elizabeth Monahan, and they are with Common Tables. And I have to remind myself, both of you, that it is a plural, Common Tables, because you have people coming from very diverse places coming together and interacting and learning how to do it in a very cohesive way. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. Nice to be on.
And Elizabeth, you're calling again from where?
Well, I live in just outside of Denver, but I'm calling from the mountains. When it becomes the weekend, my husband and I run away to our cabin in the mountains, so we're about an hour and a half west of Denver.
Nice. And you had mentioned to me off air that a thunderstorm had just rolled through, but it's not through yet. We could use some of that out here on the West Coast as well. Let's get started by finding out about Common Tables and, of course, the website that's available. How did it get started and why?
I have a real basic belief, Richard, that as a global family, our challenge isn't that we can't get along with one another. The challenge is that we simply don't. And my belief is that the reason we don't is because we don't know one another. And really, all faith traditions that I'm aware of, it's a part of their tradition that breaking bread together is a sign of peace. In fact, there are some traditions where to say, I don't want to break bread with you, is the equivalent of a declaration of war. So we thought if we can bring people together from diverse belief systems and cultures and races, that and then just give them a chance to sit down, have a meal together, and visit and get to know one another without a lot of the structures and stuff that some organizations impose on people. But just let them get together, visit, get to know one another, and find out what they're like.
My wife and I just saw a movie not just a few days ago that came out, and I'm watching this movie, and it's unfolding, and it's about control, and it's a war that's going on, and it's a very popular movie that's out today. And at the end of the movie, I was perplexed because I couldn't figure out why this was going on. It didn't make any sense to me, and it wasn't two groups of people on the planet that were fighting. This was the Terminator series with the machines. I'm thinking, why are you bothering taking the humans prisoner? Why don't you just kill them all? I mean, isn't that what you want, is to take over the planet? What do you need the people for? It didn't make any sense to me. So I take that now down to the human level, and I still don't understand why one group of people has to control another for any reason, under any circumstances, whether it's through fear and intimidation, verbal, or physical, or when you start having these conflicts. Have you been able to figure out that reason why?
Again, I think a lot of it is just a fear of not knowing. I think that in my experience within our groups, as people get to know one another, all of these barriers come down. And when the barriers are down, then conflict becomes, I wouldn't say impossible, but it becomes very difficult. It's hard to go to war against your friends.
Yeah, I certainly can understand that. I've been through some personal growth programs back in the 80s and early 90s, and as I would enter the doors, I would start judging the people based upon their appearances, thinking, I don't want to associate with them over the next 5 days. You know, they don't look like my kind of people kind of thing, you know?
Right.
But by the end of the 5 days, they were my best friends.
Yes.
It was one of the most amazing, and so after the first couple of programs I went through, I said, okay, when you walk in the door, don't do that anymore. You know, because it doesn't work.
Yes.
It's fascinating. And so when you do that, we're going to find out about the process that you go through to help break down those barriers, to bring people together to a common table, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we're with David and Elizabeth from commontables.org. We're going to continue here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. I'm Rita's in studio with me. And we are here at Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. We are streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com, big old listen live link there. You can click there. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
Are you sad or angry about past events in your life? Would you like more joy, love, and peace? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Okay, it's time to play Name That Restaurant. Here are the clues. This mystery restaurant is located in Santa Barbara.
Well, that narrows it down to about 550.
This restaurant has indoor and outdoor seating.
Oh, now you're talking. There are only a couple of hundred restaurants that have outdoor seating.
Give up?
No, I'm looking at nippers.com. There are menus, recipes, the forum, restaurant news, and over 200 restaurant reviews written by professional food journalists.
Check out nippers.com, always serving up all the right answers about Santa Barbara restaurants.
I love AgriTurf. Yes, I do. They have everything for my garden. It's true. Over 50 years in business and still going strong, Bob's sons have taken over. That's George and John. Barbara is a beauty and has solutions for all your garden needs. And if you ask her, she'll even diagnose your leaves. AgriTurf has fertilizer, soil amendments, power equipment, and shears. You can have them come to your house if gophers have driven you to tears. Compost tea is brewing and will make your garden shine. Organic solutions at AgriTurf of every sort and kind. AgriTurf, oh AgriTurf, you have won my heart. Morning coffee and a donut make yours the place to start.
AgriTurf has everything your garden needs. On Las Positas and Modoc, open Monday through Friday from 7:30 to 5 and Saturday from 7:30 to 2. Call 569-2257 or on the web at rosecare.com.
New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to make your dreams come true. For some of us, it's the dream of just getting along with one another, being able to get from point A to point B without getting all frazzled. And we were talking off air about commontables.org and the purpose behind it all. And we have David and Elizabeth on the line. David, what is your role, or if you will, title with Common Tables?
Oh, wow. Pretty much everything top to bottom. I'm the founder and the executive director, and I'm also the guy that takes out the trash.
I was going to say, and chief bottle washer, as the saying goes. Elizabeth, how about you?
I am actually a media relations marketing communications consultant, and when I had heard about Common Table through a mutual friend, they had actually asked me if I would be willing to work with them, and I had a chance to get to know Dave and Kay Corby. Kay is his wife, who's not on with us right now, but I just really enjoyed them so much, and I believe in their mission. So I'm doing pro bono work and helping them tell their story.
Why did you get involved, Kay, Elizabeth?
See, now you have another name involved. I got involved because, again, I think what Common Tables is trying to do is, it seems so lofty, it seems so hard to attain, but to me it is possible. And, you know, I'm one of six kids, and even in that environment where we were all raised the same by the same people, you know, even there's conflict. And I think it's a really remarkable thing when you can take people, have them try to figure out those things that they have in common, and recognize that while there are differences, those differences are okay. And I like how Common Tables recognizes that it's, you know, it's good to celebrate the things we have in common and respect our differences. And that's why I got involved.
Well, I come from a family of six siblings as well, so I can certainly I can certainly relate to the conflicts, but also I wouldn't trade them for the world. They're all very dear to me, and I still try to stay in touch even though we're out here on the West Coast. And it's very important to look at the commonality, the common denominators amongst people. David, I want to kind of go back a little bit to your involvement and why you started this in the first place. Based upon what you've told us thus far, I'm sitting here as, say, the man on the other side of the fence saying, what's the point, David? We've been fighting for thousands of years. This is never going to end.
Let me illustrate by an example. We had a group, I got an email a few months ago from a member that had just finished up with one of our groups, and it happened that he and his wife were Baptists, and they sent me this email, and they said, you know, we really love the experience. We want to get involved with another group as soon as you can arrange it for us, but I would ask that next time you try to get us into a group that's more diverse, because we found with this group that after about our second time together that we were all about 95% the same. Well, Kay and I are going, yeah, all right. You know, he gets it. He doesn't know he gets it, but he gets it. Because in his group, there was he and his wife who are Baptists. There was a couple who were New Thought. There were a young couple in their 30s that were both agnostics. And then there were two Jewish lesbian women in their 70s. And
okay.
He's complaining that they were too much alike. And I'm going, okay, well, that's the point. You know,
yeah.
If you would just sit down and talk with people, you're going to find that you have a lot more alike, a lot more in common than you do in difference.
Well, during the break, we were chatting, and my wife used a term that I want to throw out. She said that you try to bring people, this is a question, that you try to bring people together of like mind. But from what I'm hearing, that's not exactly the right term to use, is it? Because it's not really people of like mind.
We ask people, well, first off, they're people of different belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
But we ask that, we operate with very few rules. The only real rule we have, in fact, is no proselytizing. But we ask that people come together with open hearts and in a spirit of curiosity.
So that aspect of like minds is what we're looking for.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, how long has this organization been around, and how many people have you touched that you're aware of?
We've been around a little over 2 years. We have people that are directly involved with us in one form or another, about 1,200. We have actual members in right now in 32 different states, a little over 100 different cities, and six countries other than the U.S.
You know, I worked for 15 years for a religious radio station, and it was fascinating as far as learning about the various sects of Christianity, as I describe it, because they did have a common thread, a common theme through them. But it was fascinating to listen to each individual programmer who would come to the station and share their perspective. And at times, it could get rather heated. You know, and they would want to attack the others, but you know, there was a certain level of civility that was maintained, of tactfulness.
Yes.
Now, when you say that you're not allowed to proselytize in these groups, and we'll talk about how these groups get together in just a moment, it doesn't necessarily mean that you won't get into conversations about religious and or spiritual matters.
Correct.
Per se.
Yes. Yeah, we the other night, Kay and I were invited to a group here in Denver was having their fourth meeting together, and it happened that that evening was being hosted by a couple who are Baha'is. And within their group, they had decided that the evening's host got to pick the topic, and so the host started out the discussion by saying, "Okay, let's go around the table. Who at the table here believes that when you die, that's it? You know, just nothing." And at the table, there were two Methodists, two Baha'is, two Shiite Muslims, and two New Thought people, and they went around and everybody said what they believed. Then the Baha'i gentleman did an interesting thing. He said, "Well, let's go around again and take your dogma out of that and just describe it in terms of what it means to you." And they found that they were all saying pretty much the same thing. It was an interesting exercise. But when people are willing to go to curiosity like that, it's amazing what they discover about one another.
What are the things, we've just heard, of course, one thing that's discussed, but what is determined to be the topic at the table at a given gathering?
It varies widely with the groups. We provide people with some conversation guidelines that give different topics for different of their times together that get a little deeper and a little heavier. And they're like the sort of like icebreaker games you play at conventions that none of us much care for, I guess. But what we found is that with very, very few exceptions, when these groups get together, they are just so overwhelmed with curiosity that they just jump right in. And I had a guy tell me the other day, he said, "You know, we hadn't been together 10 minutes, and we were talking about topics that we don't even discuss with our closest friends and family."
Hmm.
Because they're it's like a breath of fresh air to these people to have this opportunity, these people that are just wanting to share.
In most of the communities, is there usually just one group that gets together, which raises the question, you end up meeting with the same people over the course of, you know, several months and getting to know them very well, which again is a very good thing, but then you don't really, I mean, how do you draw other folks into these groups?
Okay, our basic group consists of four members or four memberships, and a member can be either a couple or an individual. Okay, so a table consisting of four memberships would have anywhere from 4 to 8 members depending on the mix of couples and individuals at the table. They would all be of different faith traditions. They would meet over a course of 6 months as our general time frame. They would meet at each couple's home for dinner one time. Then at the end of 6 months, if they elect to continue on with common tables, and something over 90% of the people are doing that, then their name goes back in the hopper, so to speak, and we try to as quickly as we can to find a new group to reassign them to, and preferably one that's of different faith traditions than whoever they were with in the first group.
Elizabeth, this has to be rather challenging for you as far as trying to get the diversity of belief systems out there involved, both from the standpoint of those who would be interested in being involved, but also those who would sit at the table across from some of the faiths and or belief systems that are in the news today that don't have the greatest of PR campaigns going on by some of their representatives elsewhere in the world.
You know, it's funny because Dave, he really is the guy behind, you know, he and Kay are the force behind Common Tables. But the work that I've done is trying to let other people, you know, try to make other people aware of Common Tables. And I find that really the media in general and people I speak to, bloggers and other folks in the social media world as well, are really actually open. Because the thing is, if somebody says, well, that sounds stupid, I mean, even if they actually think that, they're not going to say it because it just shows right off the bat that they're narrow-minded in a topic that, or about a topic where open-mindedness is really the whole purpose of why people are getting involved, is to learn something new. But I do find sometimes it is challenging. And what I found right before the elections is we sent out a sort of a note, really, if you will, just to different folks to say, you know, during this time of really politically charged conversation, keep in mind that while it's important to respect everybody's religious and cultural differences, it's also important to respect people's political differences and, you know, to treat that with respect and honor. And I found that a lot of people didn't really react too kindly to that message which I think is kind of an interesting thing. But I do know that Common Tables has quite a mix of, you know, people from different, all sorts of different political views, mm-hmm. religions, et cetera.
Yeah, we could sit and list the five or six, or maybe there are eight main religious groups on the planet that are represented. But even within each one of those eight, it splinters off into, even, for example, the two Shiite Muslims that you mentioned, David, each of those individually may very well have totally different views on the same subject of, you know, what happens when you die, just from their own upbringing and the teachings that they've been given. And so even if you were to bring people of similar faiths together, you may come into that same kind of thing, but you're really working to bring together peoples of diverse faiths of those, say, 8 or 10 main denominations. And I know that it's not exclusive to that, but just as an example.
Correct. Yeah, we have, well, and I should also mention that about almost 20% of our members right now describe themselves as being atheist, agnostic, secular, or non-religious. And I think it's important that we, as a global family, recognize that, as one of my friends that's an atheist said, it's not that we don't believe in anything, you know, it's just that we don't believe in a higher power like organized religions do. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important to incorporate, I guess, what would commonly be called the non-believers into the discussion at the table also.
I kind of like Larry King's description. He claims to be an agnostic, and his line as he describes, he says, because I just don't know. I just don't know.
Right.
And really, if the truth be told by each of us, and again, there's a difference between knowing and believing. And we believe, based on faith, what we believe. But we don't know it for certain. And there's really no way to know until we die. And then again, maybe not even then, we may not know. But I think that's an interesting bridge as well to learn to walk across and see where that leads us. You're listening to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. We're talking with David and Elizabeth there with commontables.org. And if you'd like to get more information, if you'd like to find out about groups in your area here on the Central Coast, I think it would be rather fascinating for us to participate in something along those lines here on the Central Coast. So we'll have to do some investigating there on your website and see what groups are available out here. But you can go to commontables.org and you can sign up. By the way, is there a cost for membership?
Yes, it's $35 per year is the way we phrase it, but actually it's $35 gets you two different group assignments.
Okay.
Which typically takes about a year.
Okay. And you over the course of that year, how often might you meet?
Most of our groups are meeting four times over the 6 months. We ask them to try to get together 4 times over 6 months. Some do it a lot quicker than that. Some are also taking a lot longer than that. Another thing that we recommend to our groups, and I would say at least half of the groups are trying to do this, is that in addition to the dinners at one another's home, that they, as a group, attend a worship service at each member's place of worship and then go out to coffee or something and talk about it.
You know, as a kid growing up, and as you said that, flashed on this childhood memory, I was born and raised Catholic, and we lived next door to a Mormon family. And it wasn't that I was all that interested in Mormonism, but they invited me to go to a church service. I was a kid. I didn't think anything of it, and so I went. And this was early on as I was growing up. And so even after I had gone to that service thinking, okay, not only did I experience this thing, but I also went to church on Sunday, so I'm good for the rest of the day. No, I had to go to Mass. I had to go to Mass anyway. But that was just the way it was. But I guess that was my early experience with at least some level of difference in religion and belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I've been a Baha'i, a member of the Baha'i faith. I've studied Hinduism and Buddhism and Judaism and many of the other belief systems out there, read a great deal, interviewed people on all of the different and diverse faiths. And as you have come to realize, David and Elizabeth, they all are kind of saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And so you wonder, why is it that those who feel the need to take up arms against their brethren can't see that? You and I can see it. Why can't they see that?
I think it's, again, a question of just not knowing. A very good friend of mine who happens to be a gay male mentioned to me, and this was actually one of the seeds that started me down this common table's path. He said, you know, Dave, I'm convinced that if people in America knew that, for the most part, they already have friends that are gay, co-workers that are gay, and family members that are gay. I think if they just knew that they already know gay people, I believe that 90% of homophobia would disappear overnight. And my belief is that the same thing applies to the religious differences.
Yeah.
That if people just knew a Muslim or we have one member that's now in his third group, that is a conservative Jewish, actually it's a conservative Jewish couple, and they've just been fascinated with learning about Christianity.
Yeah. Now,
those of us that were raised in Christian households, we kind of assume that everybody knows about, at least the basics.
Yeah.
People have found it a wonderful journey just to learn about that.
Well, I have to say that in my experiences at the religious station, it was a Christian station, what I found so fascinating was the people that I came across, especially authors that I interviewed, who were actually beginning the process of even stepping outside the box that they had lived inside of for so many years. They were starting to question. And I thought, well, the mainstream churches, they don't want you to question. They don't want you to do that. But these people said, you know what? I have to, because this is just bugging the daylights out of me, and something's not right. Something's not fitting. And so they began to ask questions. That wasn't mean that they were abandoning their faith. Is there a concern by people who go to the website and maybe even sign up, and there's that trepidation that, gee, I'm a Jew, and I'm afraid that maybe if I go to a group where there's a Muslim or a Christian, they may not try to convert me, but I may hear something and that may want me to convert and turn away from the generations of the faith that I've been a part of. Is there ever a concern, a fear in that regard on the part of people?
I'll give you a yes and no. Yes, in that that's a concern among some of the religious leaders. No, it doesn't seem to be a concern amongst just the ordinary people on the street. An interesting thing that we found is that there's probably an exception I'm not aware of, but as far as I know, in 100% of the cases, people that have gone through the Common Table's experience have come out more grounded in their faith rather than less. Because as they discuss their faith with people who initially were strangers, and these people begin to ask questions, and sometimes these people even then go back to their religious leaders with these questions, and it just forces them to get into the whole process of being a Jew, for example, at a lot deeper level than maybe just going to Shabbat on Friday evening.
Interesting. Elizabeth, you and your family, you've obviously participated in some of these Common Table gatherings in your area, right?
Actually, I have not.
You have not?
No, I haven't. I've spoken to a number of the members. I've gotten some of my friends involved, and I haven't because I don't want people to feel like I'm a Common Table spy.
Oh, okay. All right. Perception is reality, so we'll go with you there.
But I have had the opportunity to speak with a number of members, and like I said, I've told friends about it, and they say, "Oh, that sounds like something I want to get involved in," and they do.
Yeah.
And then, I've had that opportunity to experience it and hear what people have to say, and you know, and I think sometimes people just get excited by the opportunity to try different food.
Well, you know. The stomach is a very powerful place for people to go when it comes to gatherings. We love to have food and drink, and of course, then that, of course, brings out the conversation, and you can kind of take it just about anywhere you want. I guess then, David and Elizabeth, the main focus of Common Tables is to bring people together to get to know one another. And when I remember hearing an interesting analogy that if there were ever a war that would never happen, it would be that war where all of the sides would get together, they would fight. Only before they would fight, they would all have to abandon their clothing. And this had nothing to do with being exposed. It said it basically said, "Oh my gosh, they're just like us."
Yes.
They look exact. There's no blue coats and yellow coats and red coats. It's we're all the same. We're all built the same. Why are we fighting each other? And that's really what you're working towards, is bringing people together in community at a common table to discuss and talk about and get to know one another, as we try to do, bring different points of view here on this program, Tell Me Your Story, so that people can have a different perspective. It's very interesting, David and Elizabeth, when I came across this website, which was actually referred to me by a good friend of yours, Tara Farmer, up in northern, Oregon, that when I started looking at the website and I'm thinking, okay, well, this has to do with belief, and I don't know, that seems awful risky to go there because most of the conflicts that we have been fighting and are fighting to this day are all based on differences in belief, and for some reason these people can't get over it, so they fight.
Yes.
And here you are trying to get over it by getting to know it. You're not putting up resistance. You're actually with open arms saying, tell me what you know. Tell me where you come from. Tell me why you believe what you believe.
Exactly. It's amazing. One of my favorite questions is, if you just ask somebody of a faith tradition different than yours, if you just say, in your tradition, tell me what it is that really makes your heart sing. And then just shut up, you know, and it's just amazing the things you hear.
Mm. Now, have you found, I know that it's only been 2 years in the offing, as it were, have you found that some of these people have begun to create some long and lasting friendships?
Yes. Yeah, I would say it's more common. The basic format, as I've told you, is four dinner meetings, but it's, I would say, more common than not that groups will agree to keep staying or to keep seeing each other at least once every 2 or 3 months. Beyond that,
interesting. I know, too, as I said before, that, you know, even two of the same faith are going to have different perspectives on even the writings and so forth.
Yes.
And that in and of itself to me is interesting. What do you see for the future of Common Tables?
I believe that when we get enough people involved in Common Tables, that those people will then, what's the saying, when the people lead, the leaders will follow.
Mm-hmm.
And our objective is to get enough people at a grassroots level involved that they will then start telling their leaders, both their political leaders and their religious leaders, that they're just tired of this conflict and they don't want it anymore. Because my belief is that most of the conflict that we see in the world, as you mentioned, is a lot of it is faith-based, but most of it comes from the top, not from the ordinary person on the street. The person on the street is interested in feeding and clothing their family and raising their kids and pretty much the same thing throughout all cultures and religions. And once they get to realize that, and then they start telling their leaders, their religious leaders and their political leaders, that they're just not going to tolerate this anymore, then I think the religious and political leaders will come around.
You know, on the one level, I would agree with you and say that maybe then what should happen is that if the political leaders at the top want to go to battle against another group of people, then it should be the political leaders that do the fighting.
Yeah.
And leave us out of it. But
right.
But on a higher level, I would say, no, actually, the political leaders of both sides should get together around a common table.
I agree with that also. There's a saying that I like that says there can be no peace among countries until there's peace among religions. There will be no peace among religions until there's dialogue among religions. And I think the dialogue among religions needs to happen at all levels. But what, in my judgment, we've seen so far is that we've seen a lot of meetings of religious leaders, but it doesn't seem to be doing a very good job of getting translated into action. It's sort of like we're trusting the people who have a vested interest in the system as it is to bring about change. And I believe that most, if not all, meaningful change has started at the bottom, not at the top.
Yeah, there's the one song that runs through my head as you say that. The line is that we're waiting for the world to change.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, well, but the reality is that the world is going to change whether we wait or whether we do something. The question is, how do we want it to change? And if we just sit around waiting for it to change, then we really aren't having any input into what it's going to look like.
Correct.
So what you're doing is you're getting out there and you're putting some input in there saying, this is what I'd like to see. This is how I'd like to see it go. You know, not to a specific vision per se, other than people knowing where other people are coming from, a better understanding of the different faiths that there are in the world.
Yes, I've been asked by religious leaders many times that believe that I have a goal to create some sort of uniform world religion.
Oh, yes.
And in my belief, that would be a real tragedy. You know, it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part of what makes this such a this life so wonderfully rich to live is the diversity that we have.
Yeah. And go ahead.
And it would be in my opinion to have like one religion would be sort of the equivalent of just having one ethnic culture, and then there would be no such thing as Mexican food or Italian food, or you know, there would just be food. And I think that would be kind of boring. It's like there are religions have created this incredibly rich tapestry for us.
Absolutely.
And there are those who would say that we would be better if everybody believed as they did. In other words, if instead of this rich tapestry, we had just a plain beige carpet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be pretty boring and a major loss.
Well, I'll take an example from our recent economic history and say that due to the fact that there were so few corporations, global corporations, controlling the vast industries around the globe, that when they, the global corporations, went under, it took all of the other industries around the world with them. Well, if you had kept the diversity and you hadn't gobbled up all of the little companies into one giant corporation, that never would have happened.
Correct, yeah.
So if you conglomerate all of the religions into one, well, you're going to wind up with the same kind of economic or religious deficit. Elizabeth, I wanted to ask you from a woman's perspective. I know you haven't attended any of these gatherings, but you and I both know that for the most part, most of the conflict that has been going on has been started and fought by men. Bringing the diversity of peoples together, it's diverse men and women that are getting together. Is there a perspective on the part of some of the women that participate that this is like, it's about time? I've ever wanted to do is talk.
I think that I can't say that's really necessarily something that's come from the women who participate in Common Tables, because again, I think that's a sentiment that probably the majority of women have anyway, is given that opportunity to sit down and talk and be heard.
Mm-hmm.
We welcome that, but I think that there probably is that, and I need to ask that question specifically, because I think it's an interesting one. I also think that when you talk about the folks, you know, men and women, they all appreciate the opportunity to, you know, it is about time to let's talk in a civilized manner. Let's have a conversation, and it's okay if everybody has, you know, it's all right if you think that your God is the one true God. That's great, but my God might be the one true God too, and you know what? They may be the very same entity. How interesting is it to explore that, to go back in time and to see where it all, you know, where the tree started branching out?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that those are the, you know, I think that's what people in the big picture they strive for, as, you know, not necessarily from a female or male perspective, but as a human perspective. But I would say that, you know, there are, I'm sure the average American female probably does say, just give me a chance, let me at it, and I'll show you how power should work.
Well, exactly. As a matter of fact, you know, I would like to actually see a larger number of women running the show, so to speak, because I've already seen how the guys have been doing it for 200 to 400 years. And I got to tell you, in some cases, they've done pretty good. I'm not saying that they've all been bad, but look where we are today. And most of it has been handled by men. And I'm not buying the arguments that I'm hearing against the necessarily. And I'm not saying all female. I'm just saying a larger majority of women involved in some of the decision-making processes. What have we got to lose? I mean, look at where we are now. And maybe what that'll teach us also is, after the experience with a majority of women, is, you know what, we really can't do it separate from one another.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at old ancient tradition, you know, mm-hmm. According to, if the first deities really were female deities, you know, if the goddess was the original deity, it would be interesting to see if everything were to go full circle and go back to that.
Yeah. What about people involved in paganism and witchcraft and the nature religions, if you will? Are those folks participating, David?
Yes, they are. In fact, they are really some of our most interested and valued members. We have a group I know that just started here in Denver that has a woman in it that has identified herself as being Wiccan, and in talking with some of the other people at her group, I know they're just fascinated with what she has to say, because it's completely different than the stereotype. And we have a group meeting in Boston that has a man in it that identified himself as being a neo-pagan, so... So those groups are represented.
Everybody's getting involved. That's fantastic. We're going to continue our conversation with David and Elizabeth with commontables.org. You can go to that website directly. You can go through our website, richarddugan.com. We have a link to commontables.org. And we are going to continue here on AM 1290. I'm Richard Dugan. This is New Paradigms for a New World. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
Are addictions ruining your life? Have you lost hope and long to discover help for a brighter tomorrow? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd.
The Los Angeles Dodgers have another exciting season lineup. Come along with Santa Barbara Airbus again and catch all the action at Dodger Stadium. The Diamondbacks slither into town on Monday, June 1st, and the Dodgers take on the Phillies June 7th. Be part of all the fun and excitement again this season with Santa Barbara Airbus. Call us at 964-7759 for our complete Dodger lineup and prices. And for you Dodger fans who already have tickets for these games but don't really want to drive, hop on our Dodger bus and let us do the driving. Call us for details and for a complete Dodger schedule. Call 964-7759. That's 964-7759.
Strike three, you're out!
TCP 1262A.
Okay, it's time to play Name That Restaurant. Here are the clues. This mystery restaurant is located in Santa Barbara.
Well, that narrows it down to about 550.
This restaurant has indoor and outdoor seating.
Oh, now you're talking. There are only a couple of hundred restaurants that have outdoor seating.
Give up?
No, I'm looking at nippers.com. There are menus, recipes, the forum, restaurant news, and over 200 restaurant reviews written by professional food journalists.
Check out nippers.com, always serving up all the right answers about Santa Barbara restaurants.
Take to that road, see how far it goes, and on that great ocean road, all the country's in our bones, all the trouble that you know empties out as you go.
New paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan, bringing you changes and knowledge of those changes to help make your dreams come true, and also working on how to pronounce my last name after 48 years of having it. We are here every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. You know, after not being here live for almost for 3 weeks, it's interesting getting back in the saddle here. We are continuing to talk here in the last few minutes of our program with David and Elizabeth with CommonTables.org, and we broached this subject a little bit a few moments ago, dealing with the future of Common Tables, and I wanted to touch upon that from more of a technical standpoint, because yes, it's a wonderful thing to have the membership and then have the group get together over a dinner, breaking of bread, as you like to use the term. But there's going to be somebody that is just, I mean, they are just really aching to be a part of this. They want to learn more about other faiths and so forth. They're very curious, and yet they're the only one in their area. So how is the future of Common Tables going to assist them in being a part of this? I think this is an incredible, and I may be stepping way out here, but Nobel Peace Prize kind of thing.
We have we've already created a website that can be found at virtualtables.com that is only available to members of Common Tables. So there won't be a lot of other people crashing the site, is the point. But we have, for example, a young woman from Istanbul that was wanting to get involved in some dialogues, so she joined Common Tables to access the Virtual Tables website. On that site, it's almost like sort of a Facebook type of site, in that people can set up their own individualized profiles. They can, on that site, form their own what we call virtual tables, which can be as many people as they want to include. They can form their virtual tables to be either public or private, If private, then only the members of their group can participate. We have then chat rooms for the virtual tables members. We also have open chat rooms, open forums. People can, some of our tables, our physical tables, are using that site to coordinate their meetings, to exchange family photos, that sort of thing, like you do on Facebook.
Hmm. So there is going to be that opportunity for that lone person out there in the wilderness somewhere who is just dying to be a part of this wonderful effort to learn more about the people that inhabit the planet with them, to do that and to participate. And again, it's virtual table singular or tables plural?
Tables plural.
All right, so that's virtualtables.com.
Yes.
And again, for members only, so you become a member and you'll have access.
And yeah, they have to become a member of Common Tables, and then is all they have to do then is go to the virtual tables site and sign up.
Well, wonderful. In our last couple of minutes, and I'll ask you if you can to be brief, both of you, with everything that you folks have done in your lives and all of the work that you're doing now, why this? Why now? David?
For me, the biggest single point was that a lady said to me when I was first working on this concept, and I just can't help but think that if I had been a member of a group like this and had a dozen friends that were Muslims prior to 9/11, that my whole take on 9/11 would have been completely different than it was. And her answer to me was, she said, you know, if you had a million people doing this, 9/11 might not have ever happened.
Hear, hear. And Elizabeth.
You know what? Because it presented itself when it did, that's why now. I think whenever it would have come along, I would have done it because I just think it's a great idea. I'm excited to be part of it.
And you and your husband are both a part.
Because this is my, you know, because I am a PR media person, media relations person, it's mine. And my husband's part of it because he supports whatever I do.
Ah, wonderful. Well, I want to thank the both of you for joining us here on the program, and I encourage people to check out commontables.org. That's commontables.org. Listen to this interview again. Get more information. If you're really about making change in your world, one of the greatest places is to start by learning about other people, where they're coming from. That's the whole point. Because the bottom line is, if you get to know somebody, you get to know them really well, the odds are pretty low that you're going to go to battle with them. And I think that the two of you and David, your efforts 2 years ago and what you've brought forth, it's just fantastic. And I want to thank you both for joining us on the program.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Richard.
You're very welcome. Ask you to stay on the line as we wrap up our program. This is Telling Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're here every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. The interviews are available. They're archived at richarddugan.com. Just go to the radio shows page. Probably in about 10 or 15 minutes, I'll have this program up there ready to go. I hope that you will join us every Saturday. Next Saturday, we're going to take your phone calls. That's right. We're going to have a special guest who will be giving you information based upon your questions here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Until then, love to Lal, and have a great Saturday.
Oh, there's a thousand things to do. So let's start here with me and you. Gonna take a little